Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 10-7031. Oscar Salazar, by his parents and next friends, Adela and Oscar Salazar, et al., Clarence H. Carter, in his official capacity as Director of the Department of Human Services, Appellant, versus District of Columbia and Adrian Fenty, in his official capacity as Mayor of the District of Columbia, Appellants. Mr. Love for Appellants, Ms. Millian for Appellees.
Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Richard Love for the District of Columbia, Appellants. Your Honor, in September of 2005, the District Court entered an order that begins as follows. Upon consideration of the difficult and complex issues related to the dental order that the Court had entered a year earlier, it is hereby ordered that the Court monitor review all appropriate literature, discuss with relevant professionals nationwide, and gather all appropriate information and whatever consensus exists regarding activities Medicaid agencies can take to increase utilization rates of dental care, referred frequently in the briefs as participation rates. The monitor issued such a report pursuant to that order in January 2006, and that report presented significant new evidence regarding the court's dental order. First, the monitor questioned whether a key requirement of the court's dental order, compliance with the required dental participation rates, could be timely achieved. The monitor also questioned the exclusive basis for the court's order, which was the district's low participation rates, because the monitor found that the experience in several states suggests that even with sustained efforts to improve access to dental care, including substantial increases in the reimbursement rates to dentists, utilization or participation rates grow slowly. And the monitor also cited a study from a few years earlier. Yes, sir.
Let me just get to the chase here. The district court said 19 months is too long a delay for your motion, and said the delay was unexplained.
Well, I think that the motion did explain the reasons for the delay. When you look at the record as a whole that was presented to the court, the district quite clearly indicated.
In other words, your motion didn't start out by saying, in light of the monitor's report filed in January of this year, we're filing this motion.
Well, the motion didn't start out that way. The reply, however, clearly did. In the reply, and the district court really failed to address this contention that was clearly addressed or clearly raised in the reply, that the monitor's report, and I'm quoting, makes clear that the ultimate requirement of the dental order is utterly unrealistic and may not be achievable at all. This is an extreme case. The dental order requires the district to achieve a result that the court monitor has opined to be unachievable with tools the monitor has found unlikely to succeed. Rule 60B6 was designed for just such an occasion. So I do think it was explained that the district had dismissed its appeal and presented this issue to the district court based on a different record than it could have previously presented, including the report that the court itself.
Why didn't you pursue the appeal? Wouldn't that have been a cleaner shot at this?
Well, no. We want to present the information raised in the dental order to the district court in the first instance. Again, the dental.
I thought your strongest argument was that the dental order authorized the court to do something that the settlement order and the statute expressly forbade. And there was nothing about changed circumstances. There was nothing that came out of the report that was any different on that issue, right? I mean, the issue was clearly before you all with the appeal. So why didn't Why didn't you pursue that instead of?
Well, I think there is one, I think, that at worst is clarified at any rate by the monitor's report, and that is that that there is no 80% goal.
The monitor's report is irrelevant for your major argument, isn't it? Can't you make your major argument simply by looking at the language of the settlement order and the language of the dental order?
You can, but I think that the monitor's report adds two new elements. One, the court did rely on a reference to an 80% participation rate that does not relate to dental care. It relates to child health screenings that doesn't include dental screenings. And the monitor's report adds additional evidence to support that. I do think that was clear from the settlement
order.
But
why didn't you all argue that Rule 60B4 about void judgments was at play here? I'm confused by the district's litigation strategy here. If you go 60B4, it's a void judgment. You don't have the timeliness problems. Seems to be a stronger argument, but you didn't make it.
No, we did not, Your
Honor.
Have you
waived that argument? Or?
I don't think so. I think one of the things that the district court failed to take account of that I think is the nature of this litigation. This is a institutional reform case where the district court has ongoing oversight of the district's Medicaid program, and it presents considerations.
Isn't your argument that the dental order is void?
Well, I think that the dental order
beyond authority.
Right. But I think this court can address that issue because of the nature of this case. This case is not. This isn't a money damage case where we're trying to undo a damage award. The plaintiffs have had the benefit of this dental order for 6 years. And it does not present the federalism concerns that the Supreme Court has talked about in Horn and Rufo and Frew. Makes this a case that's not a run-of-the-mill case, and mandates.
What I'd like to ask you about is when you have these institutional orders, and the district court's opinion makes reference to the fact that there was a lot going on. That the district court was encouraging the parties to get together to resolve things, and that long footnote the district court has explaining why the district court took so long to rule on your motion.
Yes.
Suggests to me that, well, a lot was going on, such that talking about the time limits of a Rule 60B motion seems an odd way to proceed, but I honestly don't know if that's the way it's intended for these institutional litigation proceedings to be handled. In other words, if the settlement says, here's how adjustments can be made, then that procedure has to be followed. But in this case, where the plaintiffs came in and sought sanctions against the city and the district ultimately entered this order, aren't you bound by the Rule 60 time limits here?
Well, no, I don't think that we are. The settlement order itself has two paragraphs that deal with changes or enforcement of the settlement order, paragraph 72 and paragraph 79. This is an enforcement order, and it was entered pursuant to paragraph 79, which gives the court broad authority to construe and enforce the settlement order as necessary. She can enter any orders as necessary to enforce and construe the settlement order.
All right, but once it does, as the district court says, then if you're going to seek a change of that order, you have to do so in a timely manner.
Well, I don't think so. I don't think it's constrained by Rule 60B, unlike paragraph 72, which
well,
clearly is.
You adopted the Rule 60 approach, didn't you?
No, I don't think so. I think in paragraph 72, there's explicit reference to.
No. I mean in your motion. I mean the appellees criticized the motion for not designating a rule. But then in reply, you adopted this Rule 60B
yes.
approach.
Yes. But we raised two basis. One was the court's inherent or enumerated authority under the settlement order, and the second was Rule 60b-6 in light of the extraordinary circumstances presented by the very report that the court had requested of the monitor to try and address the difficult and complex issues in the dental order itself.
You abandoned Rule 60b-5 in your reply brief, so we're talking about a 60b-6 as your premise.
Yes, that was what the district relied on in its underlying motion to vacate.
So we're only talking 60b-6, and what authority are you resting on that would permit us to weigh in at this point? Were you,
well,
you failed to take an appeal?
Well, there's a number of bases which we advanced. One is the authority, the case authority from this court in both Computer Professionals and Good Luck Nursing, which recognized that a critical piece of evidence is a proper consideration under Rule 60b-6, where it raises a question about the justness of the underlying order, and we think that's exactly what occurred here. We also referenced some, I would submit as persuasive authority from the Seventh Circuit in the Shackman case, which takes into consideration, or says the court should take into consideration in an institutional reform case, the effect of the order on the current public officials. And I would also cite, in terms of the district court's over-reliance on the fact that the appeal wasn't maintained, to the Supreme Court's recent decision in the Horn v. Flores case. And if I could, what the court said, and I'm quoting, in attributing such significance to defendants' failure to appeal the district court's original order, the Court of Appeals turned the risks of institutional reform litigation into reality. By confining the scope of its analysis to that of the original order, it insulated the policies embedded in the order from challenge and amendment. So I think there is authority for this court to look at.
And I'll keep going, but if you had argued 60b-4, there's no time limit on that. So am I missing something here? It seems to me that 60b-4 is the obvious way we ought to look at this, but the fact that you haven't advanced that makes me, and you know this case better than I do, makes me wonder that maybe my reasoning is wrong. So what's wrong with my reasoning that we ought to look at this under 60b-4? Were there no time limits? We simply look at the authority under the settlement agreement and compare it to the dental order.
Well, I'm not arguing with the court's
suggestion. It's not the court, it's just me.
Well, Judge Griffith, I'm just saying we didn't advance that in the underlying motion and or an appeal, but I think the analysis is correct. We certainly have consistently argued subsequently that the dental order exceeded the authority of both the underlying settlement order and the Medicaid statute with which it tracks. What's important here is that, you know, an 80% participation requirement and the court's refusal even to consider whether it's achievable or warranted in light of the monitor's report.
What is the extraordinary circumstance?
Well, the extraordinary circumstance is that there is no 80% participation rate. The national goal for dental is a 57% participation rate, 23% lower.
Did you know that at the time when you could have appealed?
No, that was referenced in the monitor's report. There's also data, we referenced the national report.
There is now conclusive evidence apart from the monitor's speculations that what was done is now clearly unachievable, and you did not know that before. That's your argument? That's the extraordinary circumstance?
Well, no,
The monitor is surmising. The monitor is not offering anything that's absolutely conclusive. The monitor offers the monitor's view.
Well, I think it is conclusive that there is no 80% goal that's set by the Medicaid statute, but a 57.
That's new?
No, that isn't new.
Okay.
What is
that
new?
That will come up on appeal. So what's new? Extraordinary news?
What's new is that the achievability of 80% requirement, particularly when, as in the dental, in the 2008 National Summary of Dental report that we referenced in our brief at page 20. It has a summary of the participation rates achieved in fiscal 07 by all of the states. Only one of them is above 50%, Vermont at 53%. The next highest was 45%, which three states achieved, and the majority of states had rates from 21% to 40%. And the 2008 federal dental audit of the District of Columbia, which the appellees reference in their brief, did not find any areas in which the district was out of compliance with the federal regulations. So we have an order setting a rate of participation that no state has achieved, that's higher than the national goal, and that under the circumstances of this case, we submit, particularly given that it's an institutional reform litigation case, that this court, under these circumstances, has the authority to review
Florida
it.
Florida v. Flores is a 60B5 case. So
it
say,
is.
What's your best authority? I just want to check this. Your best authority in 60B6, which is not supposed to subsume the preceding sections of Rule 60. So what's the
well? I think the court
best authority. Horn is not.
Well, I think Horn is. I think the Horn's analysis, particularly with regard to the
60B5 case,
it is a 60B5 case.
You're not
case,
under 60B5.
I think that it. I understand, Your Honor, but I do believe it's talking generally about the authority of courts to review ongoing institutional reform orders. And the flexibility that should be brought to that analysis. It is a 60B5 case, but I think the analysis is equally applicable in these circumstances and under a 60B6 argument that was advanced here.
Why don't we hear from Appellees and we'll give you a minute on rebuttal.
Thank you very much.
Your Honors, may it please the Court, I am Kathleen Millian and I represent the plaintiff class. In 2004, Judge Kessler issued an injunctive order to enforce the settlement order in this case and specify steps that the District of Columbia needed to take to increase the number of children receiving dental services under Medicaid's Early and Periodic Diagnostic Treatment and Services Program. Defendants noted an appeal after that injunctive order was issued. It asked this court to stay that appeal, and then in 2006, it dismissed the appeal without prosecuting it. A few months later, in 2006, defendants filed a motion to vacate, which argued that the district court had committed legal error in issuing the 2004 dental order. Under the Supreme Court's Ackerman and Claprot cases, defendants made a knowing, strategic decision with the benefit of counsel not to pursue their appeal. And in these circumstances, relief is not available to them under Rule 60B6.
Let me ask you, as I understand it, in your brief, you have taken the position that they don't have to meet that 80% goal. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Was that your position in the district court?
Yes, we have never argued that they
Is that the district court's position?
As far as I know, plaintiffs have never...
Even though the language of the order is to the contrary?
The language of the 2004 dental order?
Mm.
Your Honor, I submit that it is not to the contrary. The 2004 dental order requires an annual... Well, it states at the beginning, defendants will annually make a corrective action plan aimed at ensuring that 100% of children, all children, receive dental services. And then... Later in the order, it says that those corrective action plans shall be aimed at achieving the following goals. And essentially what the court does is explain what it meant by all children receiving dental services.
So let me just understand how this litigation works. And I note the district court's footnote, with which you're familiar.
Yes.
So the district withdraws an appeal. And there's an effort to move forward in this case. I guess I need to understand that if something is on its face void, it still is a legal obligation, and there's no way to get at that. Is that correct? Except to modify the settlement agreement itself?
Well, Your Honor, I would submit the defendants have not taken the position that the dental order, the injunctive order, is on its face void.
They say it's not authorized by federal law, and all the district agreed to was to comply with federal law, and that's what the settlement agreement says.
Correct, but their argument on that point really goes towards saying that the district court erred when it entered that injunctive order, when it used its broad equitable powers to say, District of Columbia, you need to take steps to increase the number of children who are receiving dental services. We would submit that the injunctive order is not void on its face.
No, the district said it agreed, as the federal statute says, to provide services upon request.
Correct. Their argument that the statute requires EPSDT services on request.
I'm sorry, I may have misled you. I don't mean to get into a substantive discussion of the district court's interpretation of the dental order, but I just want to understand your understanding of how you get this type of order modified, or is there no way to get it modified other than moving to revise or amend the settlement agreement itself?
No, I think, Your Honor, defendants could have pursued, once they decided to abandon their appeal, they could have pursued a Rule 60b-5 motion based on this subsequent report of the court monitor. They did not choose to do that. The argument they made to the district court when they filed their motion to vacate the dental order in its entirety was that the court had committed error, that the order wasn't supported by the evidence. They put in affidavits from the managed care organizations to say, we have a program here to provide dental care when children ask
Judge
for it.
Judge Griffith's questions were asking of the district, since they didn't argue 60B4, they've waived any claim on that ground.
As to this appeal, I would submit, yes, they have waived it.
Right.
Whether they could go back to the district court and premise a motion on that ground, since Rule 60B litigation is in the first instance to be entrusted to the trial court's discretion, we would submit that any such motion ought to be made in the first instance in the district court.
So the district court could go tomorrow and file a 60B4 motion?
The District of Columbia? Yes.
In the district court?
They could do so.
Would you argue it's untimely?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. It would depend what the basis of it is.
Well, it doesn't have any time limit in the rule itself, but the district court's order is this motion is too late because it's 19 months after the order and the delay is unexplained.
Correct. And that is the fact. I think it's important to look at what defendants argued in their motion to vacate the dental order. They sought the complete vacation of it, not the more limited relief that they now ask this court to order. In this court right now, they are only asking that their requirement for an annual corrective action plan aimed at meeting those dental participant ratios, that portion of the dental order be vacated. They are no longer asking that the entire dental order be vacated in this court in this appeal. So what was before the district court was a motion which said, you made an error, Your Honor, in entering the dental order, and it should be vacated in its entirety. Here are our managed care organizations who provide dental services to children. The district court, looking at what was presented to it, said, there is no explanation for why you did not pursue these arguments on appeal, since they are the kinds of arguments that are appropriate either in a prompt Rule 52 or 59 motion before me or on direct appeal. And under the Ackerman case, defendants may not present them under a Rule 60B6 context.
But in a more refined presentation, I mean, even the settlement in paragraph 79 gives the district court jurisdiction to make any necessary orders enforcing or construing the order. One would assume in institutional reform litigation like this, that's exactly what you'd find, and that when things happen, the parties can come back to the district court for the court to tinker as appropriate, right?
That's correct, Your Honor, and that's exactly what the district court stated in part of its denial of the motion. It said defendants here have not asked for a motion to modify the dental order. They have asked that it be vacated in its entirety. And in her decision denying their motion for a stay pending this appeal, she explicitly said that court monitor's opinion that the 80% ratio of children receiving dental services a year at best might be a basis for a motion to modify that portion of the dental order, but it was not a basis to to vacate the order in its entirety.
I mean, as I understand the district's position, it's perfectly content with the settlement agreement. So it doesn't want to modify the settlement agreement.
Well, Your Honor, the district has filed a motion to terminate and vacate in its entirety
the
settlement order.
The district suggested that. Said so much time has passed, maybe it's time to think about this again. But that's a different issue than before us, as I understand.
That's correct. They haven't raised the same legal arguments before, Your Honors.
They haven't waived what? Raised what?
They haven't raised the same legal arguments in this appeal that they did in their other piece of litigation, which asked that the settlement order be terminated.
So if the district is not moving to modify the settlement order, a settlement agreement pursuant to paragraph 79, its only option is Rule 60, Rule 60B?
Yes, Your Honor. The dental order was a separate injunctive order that the court issued under its authority to enforce the settlement order. If defendants believed that it was incorrect, it had a right to direct appeal, which it abandoned, or it could pursue relief under the various parts of Rule 60B. And I wanted to address one point that defendants raised, which was that one of the unique characteristics of the court monitor's 2006 report was the fact that it mentioned the statistic that only 57% of children receive dental services and that was the goal for 2010. That document, which was cited in the court monitor's report, was from a 2000 GAO report. So this was a federal government document publicly available to all, including the District of Columbia, in the year 2000. They could have presented themselves that evidence to the district court in the litigation of the dental order, but they did not. And I want to return also for one moment to defendants' change of relief that they are now seeking on appeal as opposed to what they sought in the district court. Since Rule 60B-6 motions are entrusted to the discretion of the district court in the first instance, the district court properly exercised its discretion based on the grounds presented to it. If defendants wish to pursue more limited relief to eliminate or modify one section of the dental order, they must do so in the first instance in the district court, and we would submit that also with respect to the Rule 60B-5 argument, which the court has raised, that also should be pursued by defendants in the first instance in the district court.
Anything further?
No, Your Honor. Plaintiffs respectfully submit that the district court's order deciding to deny defendants Rule 60B relief, B6 relief, should be affirmed.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Very quickly, with regard to the question, Judge Rogers, that you asked about this participation rate being a goal, we would submit it's not a goal, and we would submit that, in fact, the plaintiffs in the motion to modify that they included in the appendix makes that clear. In fact, they ask in their modification motion that these participation rates be achieved by April 15, 2015. You can look at appendix at 703 to 707, which indicates that. And as we've said, the requirement of this as a goal for submitting corrective action plans really makes no sense. There's no clear ideas. How do you ever satisfy this goal short of filing corrective action plans in perpetuity or achieving the dental participation goal?
What about Judge Edwards' point that under the settlement agreement, under paragraph 79, the district court has this very broad authority. But your position is you're not seeking to amend the settlement, at least at this stage of the proceedings.
Well, we did advance that authority as the basis for the request to vacate the dental order. The court certainly was free to grant that in part. We certainly raised the concern about the dental participation requirements and the unfairness of requiring the district to meet that. And I would submit that the court should look at the substance of the motion, not necessarily that rules of procedure are vehicles for achieving the just and legal ends. Here we're not seeking to turn the clock back.
What about Appellee's argument that you shifted your grounds for relief in this court?
Well, we have tailored our request for relief to the dental participation rates that are imposed in the dental
so
order.
So how could we find that the district court abused its discretion when that wasn't presented to
I think the court could find that, one, the court erred in entering an order that exceeded the four corners of the settlement order, and the court abused its discretion by not even considering the court monitor's report, its analysis, which it itself had requested in order to address the complex issues raised by the dental order.
What is it that you are precisely asking this court to do?
Well, what we asked the court to do was to vacate the requirement for these dental participation rates and the corrective action plans that are designed to achieve those rates.
Because?
Because
I just want to make sure that I understand what you're asking.
Because that requirement exceeds the scope of the underlying settlement order and the Medicaid statute which it tracks. It imposes a requirement that is not exist in law or in the settlement.
Is that a jurisdictional issue? Are you saying the district court didn't have jurisdiction to enter that sort of order?
It did not have jurisdiction to exceed the scope of the underlying settlement order. That's correct. Thank you very much.
Thank you.